Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek with me, Dan Gunther. And we're continuing our exploration of the Lore War comics. And since we're doing comics, you know what that means. Joining me is the wonderful Brandi Jackala and her astounding collection of Spocks. Brandi, how's it going?
It's going very well. You know, aside from the obvious, it's going well.
Yes, absolutely. But,
I started with finding one person who would do Spock fan art for me, and it ran away with me. And, I did slow down. I did slow down, and I haven't had any new fan art of Spock for a bit, but you never know.
Absolutely, yeah.
I was just saying, I have a friend in France who is an amazing artist, and I have several of her pieces on my wall. And she draws a lot of Spocks, let me tell you. So right now, I think she's working on a very gorgeous Laan. But,
oh, nice.
And she's working on a Pike, too. She's just amazing. But, so there's probably going to be more Spocks in the future.
Oh, that's great. Well, I decided to kind of join in a little bit and bring the Spock game a bit with my t-shirt.
Absolutely.
I should mention, because I always forget to mention this at the start of the episode and just kind of mention it at the end. If you want to see all of these Spocks, check us out on YouTube. We do film these episodes and put it up on YouTube now. So if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast and you're like, I want to see the Spocks, well, come check it out on YouTube.
What you can see, there's a lot, but that's not everything that I have. It's only some of it.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's awesome. It's one of, I love checking out your Spocks everywhere. It's cool.
They bring me great joy. Yeah. Great, great joy.
Awesome. Well, like I mentioned, we are going to continue our review of the Lore War series. And since we last spoke, there have been two new issues out in the series. So part 2 and 3 of the 5-part Lore War series, technically 6 parts, because they're going to sneak a special issue in there soon as well. Shax's Worst Day, which I'm looking forward to. So
yeah, it's going to be great.
I'm looking forward to that one. But yeah, for this episode, we have, it's made up of Star Trek Defiant issue number 26. And then Star Trek, the main flagship series, number 31. And those are part 2 and part 3 of Lore War. So if you haven't read those, be warned now. There are going to be spoilers for those in this episode. So be warned. Best case scenario, go read those comics. They are definitely worth a read. There's a lot going on.
I agree completely. Be careful when searching for Star Trek number 31, because guess yes. what? Section 31 will come up over and over and over again, not only because they're looking at the 31, but because there is also a one-shot Section 31 comic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's fun to wade through. It's best to just put in Star Trek number 31 lore war, and that should get you to the right place.
That's a good idea. Yeah, it's almost like you were standing behind me looking over my shoulder as I was trying to get the cover art for the various variant issues for this. And like, no, Google, that's not what I mean. Read my mind. You should know what I mean.
Yeah, what's going on with the AI there? Come on.
Yeah. Speaking of things going on with AI, oh boy, lore war.
Yeah, wow.
So yeah, let's jump right in with the first issue we're going to be talking about here. Star Trek Defiant number 26, written by Christopher Cantwell with art by David Tinto. And one thing I like that they're doing is David Tinto is doing the art for all of the parts of this. So both the Defiant and the Star Trek stuff. So it's very unified in its feel artwork wise. And we'll talk about the artwork. I'm curious if maybe that's a good thing or not. I'm not sure what your thoughts are on the art. I have some thoughts.
I have some thoughts.
Mostly positive, but I have some thoughts as well. So. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's start with the story. So we start at Bozeman, Montana in 2061. So, you know, a few years before what would have been first contact in our universe. And we see Zefram Cochrane kind of giving up on his warp drive dream. He's down and out and not happy about it. But as this is happening, Lore appears to him. And they seem to form a partnership. And over the next couple, in the next page, we're told in this historical recounting that Lore bestowed warp drive upon Zefram Cochrane and the people of Earth and, you know, basically elevated their species to serve him, even though nobody ever leaves Earth anymore by warp or anything like that. And interestingly enough, after Lore did this, Cochrane became president of Earth before being ceremonially publicly drowned by Lore as a demonstration of humanity's place in Lore's order, I guess. And this is something that is celebrated here in Bozeman, Montana at the site of humanity's first contact with Lore.
Is it though? Is it celebrated really? Is it?
Well, according to the automated Bozeman Monument site algorithm, it is.
Yeah, uh-huh. Let's see, what was the exact wording here? I have it in my notes. Oh, goodness, I forgot. I've got to put the old lady glasses on. There we are. Let's see here. The involuntary holiday pilgrimage.
Yes.
Involuntary.
Between your mandated labor shifts of 11.43 months. I also do enjoy the sign-off. Please enjoy your stay, do not litter, and make your best effort to expand your mind despite its many limitations. Oh boy.
Wow. That is, wow.
Well, from there we get to the present, and we have Kalis and Sisko breaking into the Bozeman, Montana site, which is also the prime locus point, as we learned in that little blurb. And along with Beverly tagging along, unbeknownst to them at first, she kind of tries to take out Kalis, but is unsuccessful. She's going to tag along with them. They're going to steal the Phoenix and escape Earth. So the only warp-capable ship on Earth, and it seems to be a little bit more capable than the Phoenix of our reality, or the prime Star Trek reality, I guess.
Fair enough. Well, you know, at one point in history, they did turn that into an amusement park.
Yes.
and have trips in the Phoenix, like on a roller coaster, except it was the Phoenix every time.
Yeah. And I guess, yeah, the Lower Decks crew did steal that themselves, too. So
mm-hmm. They sure did. I think it's a thing. It's a rite of passage to steal the Phoenix.
I love it. I also love in this, though, that, you know, Sisko discovers that he discovers who is helping Lore. And he doesn't tell the others, but we see, of course, that it's Data. And we've seen that in the previous issue. But he programmed a little feedback loop into the system to kind of distract Data. And it's in the form of Spot. And I love this little... Data's trying to pay attention to what's going on in the galaxy, basically. He just kind of sees Spot and gets lost in Spot's eyes.
That brought me great joy, actually.
It was adorable.
It was.
So the intention, apparently, is to travel to the Celestial Temple, the wormhole of the Bajoran prophets. But apparently, in this reality, it doesn't exist, so... Sisko's at a bit of a loss of what to do now. They've got this ship, but oh, my whole plan hinged on that, and I don't know what to do now.
It's interesting, because as we go through both of these issues, we find out that there are certain things that happen in every universe that Lore creates.
Yes.
And he can't figure out how to stop it.
There's some great ones that we find out later for sure. Actually, coming up on a big one here that I really like, because we've got Worf and Alexander leading the Starfleet, Lore's Starfleet, the LSS Enterprise, and the rest of the ships into this confrontation with the Maquis. And we find out from something Spock says to Hugh that they're just kind of a distraction. They're going to sacrifice themselves for the greater mission, which is, we'll find out Lily Sato is doing something at the Menagerie, which again, we'll talk about in a bit. But this confrontation is amazing. And this revelation of Spock's here when he informs Worf that Lore believed the Vulcans would be best nullified by basically being assimilated by the Borg. But instead, the Vulcans combined all of their Katras into a single life force, which basically like overwhelmed the Borg collective and leading them all to be basically a race of Vulcan Borg unified in their resistance to Lore. And that's pretty dang cool.
It really is. And I'll be honest, I stared at that page of Hot Spock for a while. Just like, look at those abs. God. Yep. Yeah, I gave that a gander more than once. I looked at the others too. The other Vulcans there is just, yeah, I love this. I love this because we were wondering last time if these Borg ships were going to be full of Borg or if they were going to be full of something else. And it's kind of both, really. Mm-hmm. It's filled with Vulcan Borgs, but the Borg implants are basically chosen. They chose to have these implants mm-hmm. because it made them faster, stronger, all that sort of thing. And so, yeah, it's nice that that's what was on the Borg cube.
Yes.
Because I got to see Borg Spock.
Who thought Borg Spock would be hot? Right on.
Spock is always hot.
True, but Hot Borg Spock was not on my bingo card, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, well, it wasn't on mine either, but I penciled him in.
So what I love in this part, personally, is Lore's just absolute losing his mind at this defeat that is mm-hmm. occurring due to the Maquis. And I love, he's like, the Vulcans, they're a problem in every iteration of my universe. I'm about ready to start over. And my next pass of the universe, no Vulcans. But I love Data just kind of putting in there. We attempted to exclude the Vulcans from the universe 4.184 iterations ago. If you recall, it resulted in 58% of Class M planets rendered uninhabitable by asteroid impacts, an overprevalence of xylene gas, which gave everything a slightly greasy sheen, and hyper-intelligent Ferengi who brought about a cataclysmic galactic event just before, in your words, things were getting interesting. I love Christopher Cantwell's writing. especially of Data and Lore. Like, I'm loving this.
It's perfection. You can hear their voices in the dialogue. Mm. You can hear them. Even though you're reading it, you can hear them in your mind.
Absolutely. So Lore, he's had enough. He basically decides to accelerate the supernova of the Hobus star, which is an interesting choice, kind of echoing through some past stories. And this, of course, wipes out the Maquis Borg/Vulcan armada. However, of course, because their main characters, Spock and Hugh escape, as do Worf and Alexander on the Enterprise. But along with most of the Maquis fleet, most of the Lore's fleet is wiped out as well, except the Enterprise. He doesn't care. He kind of, I love how he's like, can you imagine Worf's face if his son had kicked the bucket too? He's just cackling and oof, man. Again, well, written perfectly though.
Oh, absolutely perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. That was fun. I was having fun. It's extremely well written. I think all of the characters are really well written and you can hear their voices. So well done.
Yeah, sure. Definitely. This is where Data, though, informs Lore that something else happened while Data was distracted by Spot, if you'll remember. And that's that this was just a sacrifice to distract from the true mission, which is Lily Sato. And she's breaking into something called the Menagerie, where anomalies are kept.
And I have a whole list of them.
Yeah, I love this. It's a brief but incomplete list of some of the anomalies currently being held there. I love this.
Well, let's see. Betazoids, 4. And I, at that point, I knew immediately one of them would be Deanna. Metrons, 2. Telosians, 1. Crossed out, none. Deceased.
And this was the Keeper, the one that imprisoned Pike, of course.
Yep. Elorians, 5. unnamed engineer of Doomsday Machine, 1. Unidentified 7-foot-tall mammalians in blue, 6. Those. One giant spider-like creature. I like the commentary on that. Allowed to roam free and just eat as it wants. One 23rd century evil Starfleet captain appears without fail in every Universal iteration.
Yeah, one 23rd century evil Starfleet captain.
So basically, evil Kirk is what I'm guessing. Because
there are a few people it could be. I was curious your thoughts on that. So
I immediately thought Kirk because he's the biggest one. You know, he's the most well-known. And then, yeah, that's actually it. That is that is it as far as the actual list that they have, which, again, is incomplete. So, but yeah. Metrons, what? 2 Metrons
that's
left?
It.
What?
That's all.
just a lot of weird,
Yeah. It's bizarre for sure. The evil 23rd century Starfleet captain. I was seriously kind of running through the list in my head. And I wonder if now that I think about it, it does say one appears without fail in every Universal iteration. Maybe it's not the same one. It's just one evil 23rd century Starfleet captain has to show up. So
interesting.
I was thinking Lorca, there's Captain Ronald Tracy from the original series, not Mirror Universe, but definitely evil. Like, he killed thousands of people. And
yeah. Well, that's the thing. It doesn't say Mirror Universe. It just says evil. Yeah,
exactly.
So
yeah.
It could be any evil captain from that particular prime time period.
I also loved the 5 surviving Elorians. The note here is that they are kept isolated from each other due to repeated frenetic procreative efforts. Wow.
Yeah.
Are we assuming Guinan is in there?
I hope so.
We only know by name, I think, 3 Elorians over the years. So, yeah.
Because we know Guinan, we know Soren.
Yeah. And then there was a guy, Martus Mazur, showed up on Deep Space Nine. Yeah.
Right. I couldn't remember his name.
Prince, played by Prince Humperdinck from Princess Bride.
You mean Christopher. What's his last name?
I know. What's his last name? I was going to say his name and then I couldn't remember. So I was like,
I freaking met him. I have a picture with
Sarandon, him. Chris Sarandon.
Thank you. I knew it was another famous name and I couldn't remember Sarandon.
Yeah. If you hadn't said Chris, I wouldn't have remembered though. So.
Yeah. Chris Sarandon. Wow. I forgot about that. He's so cool.
He's great.
He really is.
So, like I said, Lily Sato is breaking into this menagerie to steal an anomaly. And in the very end of this issue, we discover that the anomaly in question is Talir, a Vulcan of Starfleet, as he describes himself. There we go. Talir is being liberated. Everything they were doing was to secure their release. So, yeah, I'm very interested to see where this goes.
Me too, because, you know, it goes back to early appearances of Talir and, you know, something, someone speaking to him and that we don't find out about for a while. And just what is his purpose going to be? And he's apparently the only one who hasn't been affected by whatever it is Lore is doing.
Yeah.
The only one. He didn't have to be liberated because he was never put under the spell, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that fascinating, and I can't wait to see what they do with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we did learn earlier, of course, in one of the previous story arcs that Talir is an Organian. So when they were showing on the like list there, I was kind of wondering, like, oh, Organians? Do they? That's just a partial list, I guess. But they don't give that away. So interesting.
Yes, very interesting. A lot of interesting stuff going on here. And, you know, you really have to read all both the Defiant and the Star Trek main series in order to get all the information. That is not a problem for me. If it's Star Trek, it goes in my hold box. And the owner of my comic shop knows this. So I never miss anything Star Trek.
Absolutely. Yeah. As it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Maybe at the end of the episode, we'll talk about some of the stuff they've announced for the next few months for Star Trek. Which there's some interesting stuff coming. I don't know if you've kept up to date on that, but you've got some pretty cool comics coming in your pull box in the next few months anyway.
I should pay more attention to that stuff, but I haven't. And it's just sometimes just it all becomes very overwhelming. Too many things to try and keep up with. And so I know that I'm going to get the comic, so I don't really worry about it. But, you know, that's just how I roll these days. I'm just too tired to keep up with this stuff.
So we'll take a quick break there. And when we come back, we'll jump into the third part of the Lore War series, Star Trek number 31.
Let's all go to 10 forward. Let's all go to 10 forward.
Let's all go to 10 forward and get us in the hall.
Perfect. Team effort.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Positively Trek comes to you each week thanks to the efforts of our amazing Patreon members. If you'd like to help support the show, simply visit patreon.com/positivelytrek. Join at any level to get early access to ad-free episodes and exclusive content. For higher tiers, we offer shoutouts, associate producer credits, and more. We appreciate each and every one of our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. live long and prosper. Part 3 of 5 of Lore War, we have Star Trek number 31, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, with art again by David Tinto. We jump right back into the story, and this one's a little bit more, I want to say, stylized with how it's telling the story. Because where we start is on this space station, where the location is unknown. It's a classified space station. But we see Lieutenant Deschini, who we've known through the Star Trek series, working on this space station, doing repairs, talking to a disembodied voice, kind of written in a different script. You think it's like a computer voice or something like that. There's little clues here and there where, you know, they're betting a dram of scotch, and you're like, interesting. Who does that remind us of? But it's something we're not going to get an answer to until the very end of the issue, but it's something we kind of return to a few times during the story. So I kind of liked this, multiple storylines getting just like little bits of it kind of building towards the end. It was a little bit more an interesting way to tell the story, I think.
I agree. Well, and that's honestly, it can be really hard to do that when you have as many characters going on in this particular run, this 5-issue run, which is really 6. And so having it told the way that they're telling it in this issue is actually very helpful, because we don't want a lot of stuff thrown at us all at once. So we're going to get these individual scenes, and then they're going to make us forget about it by giving us these other scenes. And then you get to the end of the issue and you go, what? Okay.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of like with last issue, you know, you kind of forget about Sisko and Kalis and Beverly out there, because we just have them escape Earth and then they're kind of at loose ends. And then we have all that other stuff. But this issue picks back up with them, and you're kind of like, oh yeah, what are they going to do? They're just kind of hanging out, but they soon get intercepted by the Enterprise, and High Admiral Worf, along with Alexander, of course. They're going to apprehend them as enemies of Lore. But because the Sword of Kalis was used to reawaken Sisko's memories, I guess basically it has the power, if it touches somebody or whatever, if they come into contact with it, they remember the real world or their past life from the main universe. So they're like, okay, we're going to use this sword on Worf. That's the big plan here. And reawaken him like Sisko has been. So we get this kind of cool action bit where they end up ramming the Enterprise with the Phoenix. But they've also jumped clear of the Phoenix, basically in spacesuits. And they're going to get aboard the Enterprise via the hole that was blown in its side from the Phoenix hitting it. Because I guess the Enterprise dropped shields to try and beam them aboard, but of course they weren't on the ship. So it's convoluted and complicated, but they managed to get on board the Enterprise that way. So kudos to them. I'd be interested to see, like, I guess the effects budget would have to be pretty high to do this back in the DS9 days. So comics, though, you can just do it.
Yeah, that's the great thing about comics, is anything that you can't technologically render, you can render in a comic and still give us that experience. And I appreciate that.
I also have to say, like, I've been reading a lot of comics lately, and sometimes it is very, like, a very complicated thing like this, where, like, where are they? What's going on? How are they doing this? It's sometimes really hard to follow that in some stories. I have to say kudos to everybody here doing the layout and the artwork and stuff, because this was easy to follow. Like, it sounds complicated. They evacuated the Phoenix, set it on a collision course. The shields were down because they were trying to beam them aboard, and they got aboard the ship through the hole. I'm like, I know of some comics I've read recently that did something way less complicated than that, and I could not follow it based on the artwork they were giving me. So kudos.
Yeah, well done to the storytellers, well done to the artist in that regard, because, you know, I don't think it's limited to you know, Star Trek comics or any other specific kind of comics, but there are some times where you just get an issue of something and you're like, I can't see what are you doing? What are you doing here? Give me some context, please.
Somebody say something.
Yeah, somebody say something. Presume I'm done, dumb, and just give me, just spell it out. Just spell it out for me now.
Yeah. Well, they are on the Enterprise, and they are found by Paris and Kim. They're going to apprehend them. I love Harry Kim here, by the way. A wild Klingon? Try and skip me for promotion after this. So every Harry Kim, every universe, just gets skipped for promotion, apparently. Unfortunately, though, he's not going to get promoted here. He's going to die.
He can join Dr. Bashir.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to be keeping a tally chart of main characters who are biting it, who presumably will be fine once everything resets.
Well, so far we've got Bashir and we've got Carrie. So, yeah, I'll keep a tally for us. No problem.
Paris, in the meantime, though, has taken a hit from the Bat'leth. That sounds, that sounds illicit. I mean, that he has been hit by the Bat'leth wielded by Kalis. and he remembers everything now. And I really like this. He remembers just in time, basically, to see Harry Kim be killed in front of him. And, you know, Harry didn't get that opportunity that he did to realize that everything that he was living was a lie. That was brutal. And then him trying to figure out where his wife and daughter are, right?
Mm-hmm. Which they're either in some kind of quarantine or they're just, or they just don't exist in this universe. Mm-hmm.
The computer says Moral Paris Torres, no such individual exists. And then he asks for the location of Bolana Torres. And it says, this information is classified by lore. And I have a theory about that that will make a lot more sense at the end of the comic, but interesting. So yeah, Paris obviously pledges to do whatever he can to help Sisko get reality back to normal. Beverly, however, and I keep calling her Beverly because in this reality, she's not Beverly Crusher, she's Beverly Howard. And it, you know, if I keep saying, and Howard says, you're going to think there's some sort of animated duck following them. And I don't want that. so yeah, Beverly, they kind of question why Beverly hasn't touched the sword. And she's like, I like my life. I don't want this to change kind of thing. So it's kind of something to think about is like all of these people from their perspective have lived this life in this universe. So are you killing that person by reawakening their memories of the Prime Universe? I think you can kind of get too bogged down in the ethics of it, but if she don't wanna, she don't wanna.
Well, the fact of the matter is her memory, her life was taken from her.
Mm-hmm.
So true. It is definitely, for me, there's no question, just like how I feel about Tuvix. I'm sorry, but Janeway was right. So, because again, no matter how it happened, these people have had their lives ripped away from them. And it is basically, now that Sisko and Kalis and Paris know what's going on, they can't let that stand.
Mm-hmm.
That's not this, you know, they got to take Lore down if they can ever get to him. But that's just the way I feel about it. It's like, okay, so you don't remember who you used to be and you're happy as you are now. And if we take that away, then that's bad on us. No, because you don't have all the information. She does not have all the information. And if she did have all the information, I'm 100% sure she would go back to being Beverly Crusher.
Yeah. Well, I think Paris hits the nail on the head here.
Yeah.
When he says, oh, you really aren't her. She wasn't afraid of anything. So she's afraid. She's afraid to confront that her reality isn't real. And that's, yeah, I think so. Paris is very perceptive in this, and apparently also a good engineer in this universe.
Yeah. Way to go, man.
Yeah. And they're able to storm the bridge, basically, to confront Worf and Alexander. And it's interesting. So this is my second reading of this issue. I really focused on this, the relationship between Worf and Alexander here, because Alexander charges them. He gets hit by the sword and he remembers everything. And he's basically willing to set everything right. But he says something here that just kind of blew my mind. We're closer in this world than we ever were in the last. You know, I wouldn't lie to you. So like part of me is like, I bet you he regrets, like as screwed up as this world is and as horrible as it is, and as much as he obviously is on board with setting it right because everything is wrong, you can almost hear the regret in his voice that like, in order to do that, he has to give up something that he has probably wanted his entire life, this closer, stronger relationship with his father that, you know, Worf in the Prime Universe was unwilling and unable to give him because he's just a terrible father.
he's the worst.
Just the worst. I found that really interesting. Like that juxtaposition there. That's really
the
warring things that must be going on in Alexander's mind over that.
Yeah, this is what I got out of it. I understood what Alexander was saying and how reticent he is to go back to the relationship they used to have. But here's the thing. He still has all of his memories of being under Lore's spell. Mm-hmm. And if they free Worf's mind as well, he will also have those same memories. Would that not alter their relationship for the better?
Yeah. I hope so. I guess it remains to be seen if, when all is said and done, if they still retain it once everything's back to normal. I don't know. They might pull one of those, like, only Sisko remembers, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
The prophets will probably take it away from everyone. just give Worf a good father instinct for once. Just let Worf have this. Let Worf have this. He needs to be a good dad.
Yeah.
For once in his life.
Yeah.
Just let him have that.
Agreed, for sure. So Alexander's trying to convince Worf, but during this, they are interrupted by Shax. Shax is back. Pa Wraith Shax. And this is interesting because Worf never gets hit with the sword. This is still the Worf of this universe. But in some ways, and still a man of honor, believe it or not, and in many ways, a better father, because when Shax threatens Alexander, Worf just gets incensed and attacks him, and basically allowing Sisko and his group to take Alexander while he and Kalis remain behind to fight Shax. Now, this is the last we see of what happens. Shax is leaping towards them to attack them. And then we get the rest recounted in this transmission from Pa Wraith Shax to Kai Wraith Rolarin at the High Temple of Lore on Bajor, saying that Shax won the battle and has assumed command of the Enterprise and imprisoning Worf and Kalis in the brig. So that's what he says happened. I'm curious, and I want to save some like the theories for future stories to the end, but we'll maybe stick a pin in that. But it's interesting, we don't see what actually happens, we just get this report.
It is very interesting, and I thought there's something janky with this immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, well, we don't see what happens, but here's the thing, he put Worf and Kalis in the brig. Does that sound like Pa Wraith Shax to you?
Yeah.
It seems to me like he's just would murder them where they stood.
Yeah, like that would be in keeping in with his past, the things we've seen from him. Also, okay, it's Shax, so he's capable of great things. But you mean to tell me that he was able to take out Kalis, and Worf, and at no point was hit by that Batleth.
I'm betting that he was hit by that Batleth.
Because if he gets hit by that Batleth, you know what that means, right?
Like, yeah. And then, honestly, he's going to be so pissed that he's a Paw Wraith.
Yeah.
He's going to be furious. Which is probably where Shax's worst day is going to come.
That's my guess. So we go from there to the menagerie where Lily has found Tallir. And they beam away from the menagerie. Well, Tallir hears the mines and also hears their friends screaming. So we've had the mines referred to a few times. Lore has these mines scattered across the galaxy that are kind of controlling things. There's a big reveal for them coming at the end, but this was interesting. The mines, Lily Sato, can you not hear them out there in the corners of the galaxy? Our friends are screaming. We have Alexander helping Cisco, Paris, and Beverly steal a shuttle, and they escape from the Enterprise. And they are quickly intercepted by the Free Syndicate, led by another familiar face, Nymira Von Decht, the Orion medic from Star Trek Defiant. Really great to see her again, for sure. And then this is where Tallir reveals that the mines are their most brilliant friends, quote, stripped of body, memory, and meaning. And on the final shot, this is the most disturbing artwork from this series ever. They reveal that the one that Deschini was working with on the space station is Scotty. So Scotty is one of these mines. That is a frightening image. The top of his skull suspended, his brain stuck up, wired in, while his body just kind of hangs there. Ugh.
Yeah, that's actually kind of what I was expecting before I turned the page, was something that horrific.
Yeah, so, with the look on Tallir's face and Sisko's face, you're like, oh my god, what is coming? Yeah. So there we go. To be continued. That's we're part three done. Two parts remaining plus a bonus in Lore War. So yeah, I guess let's talk about these two issues. Just our thoughts. How do you think the story's going? And your thoughts on the writing and artwork. Anything you want to say about them?
Usually I detest the whole plucking people out of their timeline, giving them new identities and memories, etc., and basically forcing them to do what you want. It's not my favorite thing, but the way that they're doing this one doesn't actually make me angry. So there is that. But, you know, basically, Cisco got his mind back pretty early. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, that's great. That's great, because he's going to fix everything. And then we find out, oh, no profits. Well, hell. got to do this on your own, man. So, it makes me wonder how Lore could keep the profits from being in that universe.
Yeah, I'm curious about that as well. I don't know how that works.
And maybe they are in the universe, but they're hiding and they're waiting. Well, they know nothing of time. It doesn't matter. It's all at the same time for them. So, which is something our human brains just cannot fathom. We just can't. After that first completely unhinged issue, I was really excited to see where this was going. I was not disappointed. I am completely invested in this. There were some cases where I felt like the artwork was a little too vague. Like, you could not, in a million years, have told me without dialogue that that was Harry Kim and Tom Paris. It just wasn't, there wasn't any defining characteristic that made me think that that's who these two people were. So, that is, it's not the worst artwork by any means, but I just feel like there could have been something in it that made them look more like them. Like Cisco, you look at Cisco, you absolutely know that's Cisco. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know why they couldn't put that into some other characters. That's my only real gripe about the artwork, because art is hard, you guys. And it takes a lot of time. and it takes a lot of effort, and I don't want to diminish what the artist has done here. Because anyone who can draw all of this stuff and make it coherent, that is a really big feat. And I feel like the artist completely succeeded on that point, is you understood everything that you saw.
Yeah. I think facial expressions and actions and that kind of thing, the artist is just excelling at that. Like I look at the shot of Shax holding the gun on Worf and Alexander, and his face is twisted into this rictus. He's just like, all is lore. And I'm like, that's so good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the likenesses on some of the characters, like you said, are a little generic. Worf sometimes feels like he could just be any Klingon sometimes. Sometimes they get him and you're like, oh yeah, there he is. But like a lot of times it's just like, just kind of looks like a Klingon. He has Sisko down perfectly. Like he has worked hard on getting Sisko right.
Perfection. Yes.
So yeah, I don't want to criticize overly, because for the most part, I really like the artwork in these issues for sure. And like I said, the biggest feat for me sometimes in these comics is keeping the action straight so that it like makes sense to the reader. And I have no qualms with that in this, which is something a lot of comic artists out there, I don't know if maybe I just don't have the right brain for it, but sometimes I get completely lost with what is supposed to be happening. So
yeah, you could give these comics to someone who has never watched Star Trek in their life, and they would be able to follow the story from the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
They would understand it. So, you know, I feel like it's more rare than it should be, honestly. So well done. Well done, sir.
Yeah. And yeah, the writing, I'm really enjoying this. I'm kind of with you, like just doing things for the sake of it. It's like, oh, that's weird. Look at the weird situations we're putting our characters in. I don't tend to enjoy that, but there's just such a very clear story they want to tell here that I'm digging it here. I'm enjoying it. And I'm along for the ride. They set up enough things that I'm just like, I did not see that coming. That's wild. I give the three writers involved here all of my trust. Just go with this, because this is great.
Same. They won me over with the first issue. They've got me right where they want me. Just give me more.
Absolutely. So I did have some unanswered questions so far that will kind of, I'm assuming, be answered as the story goes along. So the biggest one, of course, we get the reveal of Scotty as one of the minds at the end. So who are the remaining minds? I do note that when Paris asked the location of B'Elanna Torres, they said that information is classified by lore, which makes me wonder if she's one of the minds out there. Our brightest, right? Our smartest people, I think Tillier says. What do they say? Our most brilliant friends. So B'Elanna definitely counts. I think I think B'Elanna might be one of them. I'm curious. Who else haven't we seen? Would be, if we hadn't seen Spock, I would just assume him. But we know where Spock's at. We know we know Ro is a high muckety muck on Bajor. The grand poobah of the lore religion on Bajor, I guess.
Well, let's see. Have we thrown someone in from Enterprise yet?
Yeah, I don't know.
We got a Voyager, at least one Voyager person. We've got Next Generation people. We've got original series person plugged into the main. We've got Deep Space Nine people.
I've got it. It's Boimler.
Oh, if only...
That would be great.
I want to see that serious rendering in comic book art of Boimler. Please, totally. Somebody give that to me, please. I need it to live.
That would be Boimler. Great. So my other thing that I wondered about, and I brought it up during the issue, but like we didn't see that actual fight between Worf, Kalis, and Shax. So is that report that he made to, what is it, Kai Wraith Rowe?
Yeah.
Is that accurate? Or, as I think, did he get hit with the sword at some point during the fight? And as one of Rios's holograms would put it, is he now on the side of the angels?
I thought the same thing. I thought, okay, we don't see what happens, and he's... The thing that really caught my attention, again, was him saying that they're in the brig, and I'm like...
Yeah.
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And if you had killed them, you would have said so. So I think he got hit with the stick, and hit with the memory stick, or the batleth, as it were, and is now... And I hope at this point that Kalis has also hit Worf, hopefully before everything really got bad, but maybe not, maybe until afterwards. But in the same vein, it's like he knew that his son wasn't lying to him. So even though he doesn't have his memories, he knows that something's wrong.
Yeah.
So
just kind of cool. Even without all those memories, he just loves and trusts his son so much that he's like, well, if you say that, I mean, I have to believe you. That's pretty cool. I like that.
It is pretty cool. Why couldn't Worf be like that all the time?
Exactly. That's it, I think, pretty much for this. We've got these two issues covered. I think for the next one, so part 4 is Star Trek Defiant number 27, which comes out on May 21st. And then a week later, Shax's Worst Day comes out on May 28th. So I say let's schedule a recording for in between there and talk about those two issues in an episode. And then we can finish up with our third and final Lore War episode with Star Trek number 32, which is part 5 of 5. And then Star Trek Omega, which is the story that wraps up the whole ongoing Star Trek and Defiant storylines as they make their way towards the next big thing that IDW is doing, I guess. So,
absolutely.
So in the meantime, I don't know if you've seen what they're planning for comics for the next little while, but after Star Trek Omega, so the Lower Decks series is continuing. That's going to keep going.
Oh, I know.
Which I'm excited about, but...
Same.
They're starting a new series, I think a mini series after Star Trek Omega called Star Trek Red Shirts, which is set during the TOS era and follows a group of red shirts. And the first issue...
As they get killed one by one?
Well, the first issue features a skeleton in a red shirt. And it's written by Christopher Cantwell, who has said that like he has been wanting to tell... like the bloody story of red shirts for the longest time. So
I love this.
Interested.
Interesting. I love this.
Yeah. Yep.
I get all the comics, so I'll, you know, it'll be in my holds.
Excellent. Then at some point you'll also be getting a Voyager mini series, Star Trek Woot. Voyager Homecoming, which apparently takes place immediately after the final shot in Endgame. Basically they're headed towards Earth with the fleet, but there's one last emergency before they get to Earth or something. So that's all I really know about that.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then there's another Strange New Worlds miniseries called Seeds of Destruction or something like that.
Groovy.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave me Rocky Spock, so.
Absolutely.
Remember Rocky Spock, folks?
Oh, yes.
Naked Rockies fuck. Anyway.
So we'll have to find some time to talk about all of those as they're coming out, I think, because I'm enjoying talking comics again. I'm glad we've gotten back on this.
Well, I'm always happy to talk about comics with you, Dan. You know that. So especially awesome. When it's Star Trek.
Perfect. Well, I will make room on the calendar then for sure.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much for joining me this time. And thank you to everybody out there for listening and watching on YouTube. You can check out the Positively Trek discussion group on Facebook. If you have any opinions about this episode or these comics, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. All that's left is to once again say thank you for joining us. And as always, stay positive. Positively Trek is produced and edited by me, Dan Gunther, and co-produced by Barry DeFord on Treaty 8 territory, the home of the Beaver, Cree, Dene, and Métis people, whose histories, languages, and cultures we respect. We acknowledge the many First Nations, Métis, and Inuit who have lived in and cared for these lands for generations.